You're listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG, and we're online at kpcg.fm. Thanks for joining us there also, and a live link at thetrumpet.com. Don't forget about the TuneIn app. You can use that too. We don't mention that all the time, but that's a good way to listen as well if you want to put it on your smart device and take KPCG with you. This is Trumpet Radio Live, the weekend edition. Dwight Falk and Abraham Blondeau with you here today. You can follow us on Twitter if you'd like to do that, at KPCGFM, and we'll send out some links about programming content. And also, if you'd like to send us any comments or questions or anything, you can email those to comments@kpcg.fm. Well, here we are, heading into the weekend, another terrorist attack, and pretty amazing. We were just talking before we came on the air about last Friday. That was that evening into that day was the Dallas situation. So that's been in the news all week. And just when it starts to kind of simmer down maybe a little bit, now you've got this attack that happens Thursday night over there in France. And it was so, I don't know if ironic is the right word, but the President Hollande, he came out, was a day or two ago, and said they were going to lift the state of emergency here within the next few weeks because they couldn't be in this perpetual state of emergency. And then not much longer after that, another massive attack.
Right. Yeah. In fact, it was the very same day. Earlier in the afternoon, he lifted the state of emergency and then he had to reimpose it that very evening after the attack. And yeah, just a sign, I guess, of how the world's changing and where weekly terrorist attacks are almost coming more and more frequent, where we always have something to talk about.
Yeah, we have some statistics about that we'll talk about here in a little bit, get through some of these headlines, also talk about the Key of David program and the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, and then some things that have happened on this day in history as well. That's coming up on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live. And this is the headline from Washington Post: Tunisian-born man at wheel in deadly truck rampage in Nice. Police say he had a record of petty crime and was behind the wheel of a truck that barreled into Bastille Day revelers and claimed at least 84 lives. As of now, there are still people that are fighting for their lives. That number could change. So 84 right now. Took 84 lives over a mile-long path of horror, a police official said on a Friday. Investigators explored possible links to Islamist militant networks. The driver's been identified, 31 years old, Mohammed Boulel, who's he had identity documents, cell phone, bank card. Those were found inside the 19-ton truck. It's a massive vehicle there. Used in Thursday's mayhem along a palm-dotted French Riviera on Nice, according to the police official. President came out, President Obama, he had a statement. He said, "We stand in solidarity and partnership with France, our oldest ally, as they respond to and recover from this attack." So I was just thinking when I was listening to the president's comments, some of the comments from the European Union leaders, President Hollande, it rings pretty hollow after a while. You know, because he's they've said all of these things before. I think in another statement, the president Obama said that the U.S. condemns it in the strongest terms. But what difference does it make when they just keep happening?
Right. Yeah. I mean, how many times can you give the same speech and the people not expect action or some kind of drastic change? And that's what we're seeing here. In November last year, there was the the big attack in Paris there. And then now there's, which caused a state of emergency. And there was one in Belgium. And then now we're getting into in July and there's another one. And like you said, how long will the people really believe these leaders' words? They're well-crafted and they always have something ready to say at the end of these tragedies, and they're heartfelt, and they genuinely mean what they say most of the time. But at the same time, there has to be action. That's what people are looking for results. And even after France was in a state of emergency, the highest level of readiness on like the domestic level, it still happened.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It's not like they weren't thinking about the potential of this happening. And I think it might have been President Hollande where he was talking about how they had just gotten through the soccer championships and they were on the highest alert, knowing it was such a big event and looking for potential threats, and got through that okay. And then right after that, they get this other massive attack. According to the Washington Post, the Islamic State has previously called for attacks using vehicles. And according to the site intelligence group, they monitor extremist statements. It said supporters of the radical Islamist organization, also known as ISIS, were sharing the news of the Nice attack and celebrating the massacre. So a lot more will be coming out on that, I'm sure, as they kind of try to piece together how exactly this occurred. And there was talk from the President Obama as well about the U.S. is going to help them in the investigation, and it just gets to be kind of a played record that's played before. We're going to investigate it, find out what happened. There's been a lot of terrorism. It's amazing how much has happened in 2016. And here we are just past halfway. So the year, we got a lot more of the year left. This is this was something they put up on the Drudge Report. And it was a link to a website that's monitoring the amount of attacks. They don't get every single one, but they get the majority of them. I started scrolling through the list. I couldn't believe I scrolled and scrolled and scrolled. Here's the breakdown of it. During this time period, there have been, according to this website, 1,268 Islamic attacks in 50 countries. 11,664 people have been killed, 14,087 injured. I couldn't believe it was that many, because we do think about the major ones, like what's happened here in France, Orlando. You mean you think about those, but when you put it all together, the numbers are even higher than I thought.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if we take into account almost the daily attacks in Iraq, Boko Haram in Nigeria, and other Islamic groups in Africa, which have been very active, it's just a terrible sign of where it's going. And in fact, really no terrorist group is on retreat. And if anything, they're ramping up their attacks and their activity. I mean, Baghdad, they had the worst attack since the invasion. I mean, and that this is supposed to be after U.S. forces reimposed order. We left. Apparently, ISIS is on their retreat there with the Shia militias rolling in, and yet they strike back with this huge terrorist attack in Baghdad. Likewise, in France, we had just had the Orlando shooting. So it's a big sign that terrorists don't go down without a fight, that's for sure. And these, the more desperate they might get on certain fronts, like ISIS, the more active they get with unconventional warfare like this in around the world.
Last day or two, there have been headlines that ISIS is fearing they're losing their caliphate, and so they're encouraging people to export the terrorism. So those have been in the headlines last day or two, and then you having things like this happen. Now, again, it's not all the dots aren't connected yet exactly to what's occurred, but it's kind of academic, I guess, at this point.
Right.
It's still a bad result. Make sure you go to thetrumpet.com. Top story there is also on this topic, Nice attack. We should learn to live with terrorism. That's a quote that is being quoted there. This is by Richard Palmer. France must move to a real war footing if it wants to stop these attacks. One little bit here from that article, he says, these terrorist attacks are changing Europe. Austria came within a hair's breadth of electing a president from a political party once considered beyond the pale. Progress toward a European military is moving faster than ever before, but the attack in Nice shows Europe must go much further if it is going to stop these terrorist attacks. And so that's the big news, of course, is a terrorist attack. But then the other big story, and this is talked about in the Trump Daily Radio Show, and we'll talk about that in a minute, is the pushback, the response. Because these terrorist groups, although they have some pretty jarring attacks, and they do have some power, they're pushing against nations that if they decide to really stand up and make a fight of it, those are some pretty big powers, nuclear powers. And so that's the next part of the equation. What's the pushback going to be?
Right. Yeah, it's it's interesting now with these attacks, this age of terror we live in, because we haven't really had anything similar to it before, necessarily, on this scale. And we don't necessarily know the response needed to stop it, because we haven't been able to yet. And then also, we don't know how different nations will react either. We've seen how the United States reacts, but we haven't seen how these other nations will. And I think the certain terrorist groups are will eventually understand that you might be able to push nations and attack them, but eventually you're going to be met with overwhelming force. And I think that's what a lot of leaders are coming to the conclusion of, that that's how these kinds of threats need to be met with. And like that, the quote in the article title, we have to learn to live with terrorism. That might be true in the sense that the nations will have to learn to live with the response that needed to stop terrorism. And that could be something that's uncomfortable, maybe unprecedented, but these nations are going to act probably in a very strong-handed way that will shock a lot of people.
There is a lot of response to these types of attacks. Newt Gingrich had a response, and it's going to get a lot of he'll get a lot of response for his response. This is from CNN.com. Newt Gingrich, he says, test every Muslim in the U.S. to see if they believe in Sharia. Pretty bold statement. Former House Speaker Newt Gingrich on Thursday called for the U.S. to test every person with a Muslim background to see if they believe in Sharia law and deport those who do. He said this, "Let me be as blunt and direct as I can be. Western civilization is in a war. We should frankly test every person here who is of a Muslim background, and if they believe in Sharia, they should be deported." Gingrich said that in an interview with Fox News' Sean Hannity. He said Sharia is incompatible with Western civilization. Modern Muslims who have given up Sharia, glad to have them as citizens, perfectly happy to have them next door. So, as you'd expect, he got a lot of flack for this, and then he's come out and said, well, I was kind of misinterpreted, and he has some other ideas, I guess. He wanted to explain himself, so he'll be trying to explain himself. But that was a pretty, well, he said, let me be blunt, and I think he was. So some people probably would think that's a good idea. Many others would think that's not a good idea. It just highlights how this terrorism has really put people in a bind, government officials. What are you going to do about it? How are you going to solve it? And, you know, could you even implement this? Like, how would you even implement that? And then, although maybe it sounds good on one hand, on the other hand, you know, the United States has freedom of religion. And so I think a lot of people would be uncomfortable with some government arm getting into all that and deciding who can be here and who can't. So, and again, he might have just been speaking in a kind of a reactionary way because these terror attacks had just occurred. But it is a slippery slope, I think, if you get into that type of thing.
Right. Yeah, I think this is really significant because he is one of the mainstays of the Republican Party. He's been around forever in the Congress. And for him to come out and say this, I think, means a lot more than perhaps someone like Trump or people associated with him who have made similar comments before. This is a mainstream Republican shifting closer to maybe some thoughts similar to Donald Trump. And some commentators thought he might just be trying to play for the vice presidency role. I think Trump announces that today or tomorrow, who his vice president will be.
Right, and I think he was going to announce yesterday, a Thursday, and then this all happened. And of course, you don't want to make an announcement like that in the midst of this ongoing crisis.
Right. Yeah, he canceled it because of the Nice attack. So I think what's interesting about this too is that when you look at how they would actually do this. Well, Sharia law, it's difficult even to define because each Muslim can kind of interpret it for themselves. And each mosque and each religious community has a different version of it. So it's just difficult to nail down like, well, what's right and what's wrong and all these things. And then on top of that, like you mentioned, the religious liberties. And I think this is really where we've seen most of the clash in the of politics and policy is how do you stop a terrorism, which is associated with a religion. I mean, terrorism doesn't have to be from Islamic individuals, but some of the most deadly ones have been. So how do you monitor that, and how do you put in practical steps to try to vet people coming into the U.S. without infringing their religious liberties? And I think that's the dichotomy they're in right now. And this could be a dangerous precedent to infringing on those constitutional rights. I doubt it will go anywhere, but it's just interesting that a mainstream Republican would even throw this out there for a discussion.
Yeah, they're kind of, the politicians are kind of going into different camps. You have kind of an extreme view on this side saying you need to test everybody, but then you have the extreme view on the other side saying, well, let's just let everybody come on in, you know?
Right.
Maybe somewhere in the middle would be a little better idea, but it's pretty polarizing, the different thoughts about what to do with this ongoing situation. So there'll be a lot more about that. Of course, the Trumpet Hour Week in Review program's coming up later this weekend on KPCG. Make sure you listen for that. They'll be discussing quite a few of the events of the week, and I'm sure this will be one of the major ones. So a lot to discuss there. And again, you can read that article at thetrumpet.com. Nice attack, we should learn to live with terrorism, that which is a quote there that's used in the title, and read some of that, because again, while the big focus right now is on these attacks, the bigger issue is going to be the response to those. And so that's talked about in that article. And again, like Richard Palmer highlights, you know, there are some political leaders that used to be considered pretty extreme in Europe that are pretty close now to actually being voted in because of these attacks. It's making people, it's making them nervous. And even Germany is bolstering the security on their borders, you know. So everyone's having a little bit of a response to this, and I think kind of hoping that some sort of a minimal response will take care of it. But to this point, it hasn't helped, which means then you have to up the response. So that's going to be interesting to see what happens there. Switching gears here, of course, before this happened in Nice, the big talk had been about the United States and the conflict between police and some members of different cities. And that's a continued discussion that's going on. This is from the Associated Press. A man is dead after firing at plainclothes Baltimore officers. Baltimore police officers, responding to the sound of gunshots near an apartment building, fatally shot a man who fired at them with an AR-15-style rifle, authorities said early Friday. No officers or anyone else was wounded in the shooting Thursday night in a neighborhood on the city's west side. The police spokesman said it wasn't immediately clear why the man had started shooting. Four plainclothes officers riding in an unmarked Nissan Altima with the windows rolled down heard gunfire coming from the building about 9:30 p.m. And the officers drove toward the sound. When they arrived, they saw a man shooting an AR-15-style weapon. And Smith said the man then started firing toward the officers. They returned fire and killed him. So he was obviously firing at somebody. It's not exactly the same as him just going after police or something. I don't really know what the guy was doing. But at the end of the day, he had no problem firing at the officers, whether he knew they were officers or not. So there's just these stories keep popping up where the exchange with gunfire with police is maybe, I don't know if it's increasing or not, but it's certainly being reported on more. And every little story like this that keeps getting thrown in the pot just kind of stirs up some of that animosity.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's just fuel in the fire, and people don't necessarily care about circumstances, say, or some of the details. And I think what's interesting, too, is a big thing that's dangerous for cops is especially when an assailant or someone is carrying a high-powered weapon. And, I mean, AR-15, I don't know what type it was, but those are semi-automatic assault rifles styled after the M16. And they're legal, but we're seeing more people get high-powered weapons, which the police find it difficult to deal with in a conventional method. And that forces them to use more extreme measures. And this year there's been lots of talk and discussion over why the police are buying all this military-grade equipment. Some more military methods are using, and I think it's because they have to escalate their response and be appropriately armed. But at the same time, it's causing the police to be more heavily armed and have more equipment than we're used to. So there are some cause and effect that we're seeing from these different stories and different things like that. And aside from just how the police responds, also how everyone else will. And we'll see if people get emboldened because of the increase in attack, if they'll keep these increase in attacks and defying the rule of law.
Yeah, the police are dealing with a certain backlash from society, I guess, certain segments of it. Fox News has this other headline here. Deputies asked not to dine at Washington State restaurant. It's a Skagit County Sheriff Will Reichert. He said on Facebook that after four deputies finished lunch at Lucky's Teriyaki in Cedro Woolley Thursday, the owner asked them not to eat there anymore. The deputies were told that customers didn't like law enforcement there. The sheriff says his chief deputy called the owner later Thursday and says a request was confirmed, along with a request to spread the word. Well, I don't know. That's really interesting to me. I've been in restaurants and I've seen officers come in and, oh, if anything, I probably felt a little better about it.
Right.
It's got some, you know, just somebody there to make sure everything's going okay. I mean, they just came there to eat lunch, you know. So that's surprising to me. So again, they're dealing with some of that. You know, it's interesting too, because this person who owns this restaurant, you know, boy, I sure hope they don't have any problems. Can you imagine trying to call the police then and having them come out and they say, "Well, actually, you said we're not invited back here." I'm sure they would obviously go out and do their job, but again, it just kind of highlights some of the spirit that's out there, I guess, really negative towards law enforcement. And really for no reason in many cases.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that it seems like though the owner took the side of patrons who obviously don't like the law in favor of the officers or against the officers in favor of those people. And it is interesting. And I saw a headline yesterday, I think U.S. military personnel were asked not to wear their uniforms in 23 different cities. Or it might have been 32, one of the two numbers, because they say it could cause problems. So it's just ridiculous that that's, I mean, we saw this in the 1960s a little bit, where when there was a lot of tension there where they were asked not to wear uniforms or that kind of thing. But now it just that's being accepted, and it's just a sign of how the general society, more and more people are becoming government or military and police force, which represent the government and the rule of law. It's just a pretty dangerous turn. I don't know if it will continue, but it is just something that's a little unsettling.
And if you haven't had a chance to listen to the Trump Daily Radio programs this week, make sure you go back and get those. They're archived at kpcg.fm and on thetrumpet.com. A lot of great programs by Stephen Fleury about this ongoing situation with really an anti-police movement in a lot of communities here in the United States. Where is that leading? What's going to happen with that? Some really, really good programs that you need to listen to. If you haven't listened to them, take some time this weekend and make sure you go back and listen to those. Donald Trump, he's tweeted, by the way, that he is picking Indiana Governor Mike Pence as his vice presidential running mate. I think people expected that. So that's going to be an interesting ride for him. Anytime people get into those campaigns, and their lives change a fair bit, so they're going to have to go debate and do all of those things that are required. The Pokemon Go phenomenon continues. Pokemon Go players fall off of 90-foot ocean bluff. Two men apparently trying to collect Pokemon Go virtual characters on their smartphones were rescued from falling off a bluff Wednesday afternoon, authorities said. So, if you've seen the game, you go and you kind of look through the camera. You try to find the little characters, and people are having some problems. And in this case, they fell off of a 90-foot ocean bluff. I sure hope they got the Pokemon after all of that.
Right. Yeah, let's hope that that's what they succeeded. Yeah, it's just reading the stories over the past couple of weeks about this. This app that just really took off and really dominating everything right now. It's amazing. Some of the stories coming out about how people are so obsessed with it, or where they even try to play it. They're Arlington National Cemetery and the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C. both had to say it's not appropriate to play that game on the premises, which is something that should go without saying. But also there have been stories where relationships break up because one of the two people are playing it so often. And there was one where a girl said she had to buy Pokemon clothes just so her boyfriend would notice her. And all these things, it's funny, but at the same time it is showing that this kind of augmented reality type gaming is just taking over people's lives and causing them to go into dangerous situations. And yeah, just a first of its kind, maybe in this kind of way on this scale. And it's the effects aren't necessarily that great as of yet.
You know, what's so amazing, if you look at what we're talking about today, just some of the main headlines, and you have the situation, obviously, with terrorism in Nice. You have the tension with the police in this country. And then you have people walking around trying to find Pokemon.
Right.
It's like very different realities. It's really strange. You know, if those that kind of study history and you think about the collapse of the Roman Empire, there's that expression about the bread and the circus, right? As long as people have enough to eat and they're entertained, lots of things can go on and people don't pay a lot of attention to it. It kind of reminds me of that.
Right, yeah. I mean, it is amazing that this is probably the most popular app and everything in the world right now, at least in the Western world. And it's people still are using it more than maybe looking at news or following what's happening. And it is amazing just how distracted we've become. And there's lots of criticism out there for the current generation. I mean, we elect our leaders. How informed can you be about the world, your leadership and all that, when you're too busy tracking down Pokemon around your neighborhood or traveling around the country to do it?
Yeah, it's really fascinating, the different realities that are out there. Those are some of the headlines for today. The Key of David program is coming up here throughout the weekend. A variety of programs will be playing. The new one this weekend, it is a repeat, but one that is really important, always is good to go back and look at. Who or what is the prophetic beast that is always very significant, especially now when we're talking about Europe and what's going on in Europe. And if you've missed the last couple of programs, there's some new ones there, too, about Britain leaving the EU, which is, of course, a massive situation that occurred. And then if you even go back just a week or two, there was a program on the Orlando terrorist attack, and it gets into some of that terrorism, too. So all these things are topics that are in the news. Make sure you go back and look at those programs if you missed them, and listen for the Key of David this weekend on KPCG as well. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury, from Edstone, England today. And they had a chance. I mean, they're not that far from Nice, France over there. And, of course, because of the time difference, they had a chance to digest what happened a little more, gather headlines and other things to really talk about what's going on in France and with terrorism in general. So it's a really important program. Stephen Fleury talked about how Thursday evening, the coastal city of Nice, France, was struck by another deadly terrorist attack. A man of North African descent, he drove a giant truck, I think it was huge, through a crowd, and they were celebrating Bastille Day. Eyewitnesses said people were being thrown around like bowling pins, which is a pretty gruesome analogy, but that's what it was. They were being dragged by the truck. They were getting stuck in the wheels. You hate to even think about it, but it happened. It was a gory attack, leaving at least 84 dead and, of course, more injured and kind of on the verge maybe of potentially dying there. And just that afternoon, as we mentioned earlier, French President François Hollande, he lifted the state of national emergency. And then, of course, he had to reimpose it after the attack. France has been ravaged by terror attacks in this past year. We highlighted some of those statistics just globally, but France has had some major ones. And this is paving the way for a European strongman to come to power through flatteries, and that's talked about in Daniel, in the Bible prophecy there. So again, as we kind of just highlighted briefly, and get Mr. Stephen Fleury gets into a lot of detail about that on the Trump Daily Radio Show, just this fact of, okay, there's this push, but there's going to be a push back, and that's what he really gets into in that program.
Right. I mean, there has to be one if we think about it, because, I mean, Nice, France is on the French Riviera. It's a very popular spot for vacationers. A lot of celebrities go there. And it's a Bastille Day is the biggest national holiday in France. It's like our Independence Day in the U.S. So to have an attack like this on their Independence Day in such a gruesome manner, the people are going to demand action. That's what we're starting to see more and more, is that the present leaders, they want a limited response, or they just don't have necessarily the political will to do something maybe a little stronger. And just like in past history, whenever there's a threat or someone pushing at Europe, they have pushed back very strongly when they got the right leader in there. And I think that's the process, as Stephen Fleury says, that's the process we're starting to see now, is Europe's building an army. They're already talking about increasing their own security. And this attack is just going to speed it along and probably knock down all the barriers standing in their way.
He also talks about on the program how 2016 has been a year full of controversy and disaster, and it's not over yet. Boiling racial tensions in the United States, terrorist attacks around the world, seismic changes in European politics, increased violence in the Middle East. It's just a brief list of events over the past 6 months. And events are only going to increase in pace. You can expect even more significant headlines in the days ahead. And that does highlight the significance of thetrumpet.com, KPCG, where you can have a very can get on top of the headlines pretty quickly and discuss those. So it's good that we have those outlets. And yeah, there's been so much that's happened. It'd be interesting just to go back and compile a list of major events that have happened in the last 7 months. It'd be a pretty big list already.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we've already seen big headlines, but we've always, with the new big headlines, we forget about the old headlines. And when, like you were talking about earlier, with the list of terrorist attacks, if we did that for everything, all these big different news events and different categories, it would be amazing to see just how much has changed in 6 months.
Yeah, just a lot has happened, and it is speeding up quite significantly. So make sure you listen for the Trump Daily Radio Show today with Stephen Fleury. That's coming your way here in just a bit on KPCG. And again, if you can't catch it live, you can get the archived version at kpcg.fm or thetrumpet.com as well. We'll have that for you. We're going to take a little bit of a break here and talk about some things that happened on this day in history when we come back. And for our break today, we're going to play a musical piece. This was, again, we have the Philadelphia Youth Camp happening here on the campus of Herbert W. Armstrong College, and they had a talent show the other evening where some of these young people that have really put a lot of years into practicing piano and violin and cello got up and performed some pieces. This is a piano piece we're going to play today. It was performed by Micah Turgeon. He's 15 years old. The title of the piece is Pour Le Piano Prelude. We'll play that for you. And be back right after this. You're listening to Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG, online at kpcg.fm.
Thank you.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm. That was a nice piano piece there from Micah Turgeon, 15 years old, one of the campers here at the Philadelphia Youth Camp, and they performed some musical pieces there in Armstrong Auditorium the other evening. So playing a few of those for you, and you got all these intense headlines. Nice to take a break. Have a nice relaxing song. Calm the nerves.
Yeah, exactly. It's nice to focus on the melodic moments instead of thinking about all these attacks everywhere.
Yeah, yeah, it's amazing the different things that are going on. Here are some of the things that have happened on this day in history. 1099 on this day, Jerusalem fell to the Crusaders. So that's a clash that's been going on for years, and really it still is in a lot of ways. So between the Christians and the Muslims. 1410 on this day, Poles and Lithuanians defeated the Teutonic Knights at Tannenberg, Prussia. 1870 on this day, Georgia became the last of the Confederate states to be readmitted to the Union. So they made it, but they were last. 1876 on this day, George Washington Bradley of the St. Louis, I guess it would be Cardinals. I'm not sure if it was Cardinals at that time, but of St. Louis, pitched the first no-hitter in baseball in a 2-0 win over Hartford, which that's not easy to do, pitching a no-hitter. 1901 on this day, over 74,000 Pittsburgh steel workers went on strike. And, of course, that was a major industry back then and not as major today. 1904, the first Buddhist temple in the U.S. was established in Los Angeles, California. It's interesting because there are quite a variety of religions in the United States. And there's some pressure now because of some of the terrorism that's happened. There's a poll here from the Pew Research Center. Not a poll, but some statistics. And they have this chart on the increasing racial and ethnic diversity within Christianity. So if you're just going to look at mainstream Christianity, they're looking at the percentage of non-whites within that, just to see what the numbers are there. And some of these different religions, the Christian religion, there's 34% non-white in the U.S., up from 29%. They're looking at 2007 to 2014, so it's gone up. Protestant, it's gone up as well, 31% from 26. Evangelical Protestant tradition, so you got quite a few religions in here, up to 24% from 19. Historically Black Protestant, as you'd expect, that's 98% non-white, and it still is from 07 to 14. Catholic, 41%, up from 35%. Orthodox Christian, 19%, up from 13. Mormon, 15%, up from 14%, so not much of a change there. Jehovah's Witness, 64% non-white, up from 52%. And every other denomination gets lumped into the other category, up 35% from 23%. So that just shows some of the racial and ethnic diversity within what is considered the broader Christianity, I guess. Kind of interesting to see some of those different numbers. And again, there aren't a lot of places in the world where all the religions kind of exist peacefully. United States has been one for quite a few years, but there's a lot of different talk out there right now just because of all the pressure, like with what Newt Gingrich said yesterday.
Right. Yeah, it's a new age where some of this is being pressured, or it's just a new perspective on it. And it is going to be interesting to see how different these different religions act and react to different policies or to more pressure. And especially since Christianity is the biggest religion in the United States, and it's lots of different people are a part of it. It'll be interesting just to see how the different racial tensions and all these different factors in American society, how it influences them, and if that demographic will have to maybe find some drastic changes or something like that in the next couple of years.
1916 on this day in Seattle, Washington, Pacific Aero Products was incorporated by William Boeing. Give you one guess as to what company that is.
Airbus.
Wrong. Boeing, of course, as you knew, and we're kidding. I was wondering how much they get paid if you're an aerospace engineer, you can make about $146,000. So if you want to go back to school, I should say it's 60 to 146, so somewhere in that ballpark.
That's still pretty decent, though.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, aerospace. And plus, it sounds great.
Right.
If you, you know, what do? I'm an aerospace engineer. Sounds really good.
Yeah.
1922, on this day, the duck-billed platypus arrived in America direct from Australia. It was exhibited at the Bronx Zoo in New York City. The duck-billed platypus, it's they're small little animals. They're shy, too. Have a flattened head and body to help them glide through the water. They have a fur, dark brown on top, tan on their bellies. It's thick. Of course, it repels water, keeps them warm and dry, even when they're in the water for a long time. Their head and body grow to about 15 inches, and their tail about 5 inches long. Their most remarkable feature is their snout, which gives them their name, of course. It looks like a duck's bill, but it's actually quite soft and covered with thousands of receptors that help the platypus detect prey. I did not know that the male was venomous, but he is. Sharp stingers on their heels of their rear feet, they can use them to deliver a strong toxic blow. So when I think of deadly animals, I never thought of the old duck-billed platypus.
Right.
I've never seen one, so don't worry about it too much.
Yeah, it's a neat animal to look at. It's one of those ones where you think someone took spare parts and just jumbled them together because it has characteristics of other animals not in our hemisphere. But it reminds me of a documentary I watched, and it wasn't a platypus, but they had a three-toed sloth.
Hmm.
He's walking on the ground towards a tree, and the presenter is just walking beside him, talking about him and the species and everything. And they picked him up, and they have really sharp claws, and they can actually do a lot of damage to you if they get them. But they move so slow that he picked it up, and he's holding up the sloth, and the sloth was trying to hit him, but he just moved his head out of the way, or like duck as the arms came slowly towards him. So that's why they sit up in the tree so much, because they're easy prey, I guess.
Yeah, they're very all kinds of interesting animals. It'd be interesting to see what a duck-billed platypus would do with ducks. You know, if they kind of look at each other and be like, huh, that looks sort of like me, but not really.
Yeah, evolution.
Yeah, right. that's what some would say. 1958, on this day, 5,000 U.S. Marines landed in Beirut, Lebanon, to protect the pro-Western government there. The troops withdrew October the 25th, 1958, so they weren't there for too long. 1965, on this day, the spacecraft Mariner 4 sent back the first close-up pictures of the planet Mars. There were no aliens in those pictures, just some red dirt.
Right. Yeah, it would have been, cruel joke, but to play a Martian movie back instead of the real images.
Right.
See what people would have reacted like.
People, I don't know. They might have believed it. You know, you see some of those old-time movies where that famous one where they go to the moon.
Right.
And they're being chased around by something.
Yeah.
Pretty goofy, but famous. 1973, on this day, Nolan Ryan, the famous pitcher, he was pitching for the California Angels at the time. He became the first pitcher in two decades to win two no-hitters in a season. Pretty good year. Got to ask for a pay raise if that happens. 1987, on this day, Taiwan ended 37 years of martial law. Taiwan's government is a multi-party democratic regime today, headed by a popularly elected president. Taiwan's power is distributed among five large branches of government: legislative, executive, judicial, examination, and control. So that sounds pretty confusing. but apparently that's what's happening.
Lots of checks and balances over there.
yes. Interesting systems that are set up. Plus, you never really know when a lot of nations say they have, you know, freely elected officials. I mean, wouldn't North Korea claim that too?
Right. It is a democratic people's Republic of North Korea or something like that. So
it's amazing how the leader always gets 100% of the vote.
Yeah.
You think they would, just to make it seem a little more legit, they'd give him 87%.
Right. Or just put some other fictional character on the ballot so it looks like someone else is running.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. They really got them all. It's pretty amazing. The 2006, on this day, the social networking service Twitter was launched. As of the first quarter of 2016, Twitter has about 310 million monthly active users. So we have a Twitter account at KPCGFM. You can follow us there. And yeah, a lot of people are on Twitter, so that's kind of a really taken off. I mean, it's amazing. It's only 2006. Pre-2006, there was no Twitter. Can you imagine a time when you couldn't tweet your thoughts and dreams?
Yes, those are the good old days, I guess. But just kidding. But it's, I mean, I haven't been on Twitter very long, just a couple of years, I think 3 or 4 years. But it is amazing just how big of a platform it is now for official people, but anyone that can tweet their opinions or ideas, pictures, whatever it might be.
I think last night, actually, after the terror attack, I think the White House tweeted the response.
Right.
Initially. So it is pretty amazing how that is used in a lot of ways. Here's one we're going to talk about a little bit more today. 1971 on this day, U.S. President Nixon announced he would visit the People's Republic of China to seek a, quote, normalization of relations. How did that work out, Abraham?
Well, at first it was a little bit icy, but this was actually a big goal of Nixon for a long time, and Henry Kissinger, who was his Secretary of State. And it is interesting just because they were foes in the Korean War in the 1950s. Ever since the communists won the Civil War in China, the U.S. didn't have any diplomatic ties with them. And then the Korean War set them as enemies since China intervened in that war. And however, it was interesting because the U.S., obviously in the Cold War, wanted to contain communism. They wanted to stop its spread. And China and the Soviet Union, they didn't get along. They had a lot of diplomatic rows with each other, and so they were opposed to each other for a long time. And that was one factor that contributed to China being more open to doing business with the U.S., but also with the U.S., they were fighting in Vietnam, and they didn't want to be sucked into another war in Southeast Asia. So they tried to normalize relations with China, which was kind of the big mover and shaker in that region. So they tried to normalize relations, get them on board with the economy in particular. And some people think this is a huge achievement. But as we've seen lately, China hasn't been the most friendly. That was Nixon's goal. He had secret ties with China. He would use the Pakistani prime minister as a third party. He went around the State Department to actually just talk with the leader himself in a top secret negotiations. And then in the early 70s, that's when they went public and started this big reapproachment with this China. And since we've seen China's great economic growth, I mean, it's the fastest growing economy since the 80s. It's been this skyrocketing. We're into some trouble now, but the U.S. was really trying to feed into that market. And now we're so tied in with China, they hold most of our debt. And it is interesting how much we actually depend on China economically now. But it all started here with Nixon and this announcement that he was going to seek those normalization of relations.
Yeah, and I mean, I suppose you could say that the current administration is having similar policies. I mean, they've tried to normalize relations with Cuba.
Right.
Iran. I'm sure somebody else. I'm sure I'm forgetting somebody. But
Canada.
Yes, right. And it is interesting because a lot of times nations, I mean, now when you look at Cuba and Iran, they're still belligerent. So that didn't even remotely have success. But I think China's been a little savvier about it. You know, I think they're happy to, you know, say, yeah, okay. But at the same time, their national interest is what they have at heart. Yeah. And they're not, you know, they'll cooperate for a time, but always for their advantage.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a great point. At the time, this helped both China and the U.S. seek their goals. And so that's why it worked. Oh, on the surface, I mean, they're still communists and they still have human rights issues and they're still opposing U.S. hegemony in the Pacific. And what's interesting is it only worked as long as the U.S. had a strong foreign policy, because that's what kept China in check. And they could cooperate economically as long as the U.S. or China knew the U.S. had a they would react if pushed. But over the last few years, we've seen this kind of deteriorate, and that's because as China, they reached their goals, and now they're able to expand their military and start pushing for expansion. And they've been testing the United States in a number of ways, especially in the South China Sea. And the U.S. has had a very weak and limited response. And we're seeing relations deteriorate because the U.S. is not acting strong enough. And now China doesn't necessarily need the U.S. anymore. So it worked in the Cold War because it suited both sides, and China was not able to challenge the United States. But now that they can, they're building a whole new economic order to get away from the United States and to isolate it. And Richard Palmer has a great article on that, I think, or he's coming out with one soon on the new Silk Road. So it's just very interesting to see this reapproachment was seen as a great victory, but now it's starting to backfire on the U.S. And mainly it's because we're retreating from the world and not standing up to them like we used to.
Yeah, and they've, of course, obviously been pushing into the South China Sea, and that's been in the headlines the last few days as well, with the international court telling them to stop it. China saying, nah, we're going to do it anyway. And that's kind of where it stands. So yeah, that was a really I think that was talked about, the new Silk Road, on the Trumpet Hour a little while ago as well. The Trumpet Hour Week in Review program that's coming up throughout this weekend. Make sure you listen for that. 1971, on this day, U.S. President Nixon announced he would visit the People's Republic of China to seek a normalization of relations. Those are some of the things that have happened on this day in history. Key of David program coming your way here in just a bit on KPCG. We have a few segments throughout the weekend. Make sure you listen for those. And also the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury. Today's program dealing with the late-breaking situation from just the last few days, which is the terror attack there in Nice, France. Just when things seem to maybe calm down a bit, there's another very serious and heinous attack over there. And so make sure you listen for the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, which talks about that, and also a lot of really important programs throughout this week. If you didn't hear them live, make sure you go back and get the archived versions and play those when you get a chance throughout the weekend. That'll do it for us on Trumpet Radio Live. Myself, Dwight Falk, and Abraham Blondeau. Thanks for joining us today and this week. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you back here on Monday. You're listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG.